Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another Bike James podcast. I got a few things I'm going to share with you in this podcast, starting with some skills training advice, touching on the a knee stomp versus a hip stomp when you are jumping and manualing your bike. I'm going to touch on the Turkish getup, which is one of my favorite exercises. But a little bit of the history of the Turkish getup. I think a lot of people are missing out on some great variations because it seems to be thought of as a kettlebell exercise. And so there's a little confusion there as to, you know, the Turkish getup and some different variations and the value of them. And then finally, I'm going to bring you some bro science. And this is where I look at some of the research out there on different things and then bring that to you, tell you what the science is telling us about stuff, and then kind of interpret it a little bit. And that's where the bro science comes in, which is where I give you my interpretation of it and what that means for us as mountain bikers. So diving into it, the first thing that I wanted to touch on was, like I said, what I'm calling a hip stomp versus a knee stomp. And this comes from the advice, you know, in the mountain bike skills training world, there's different coaching cues that start to get more and more popular out there. Things like elbows out, which is not good advice. I've got some articles on my blog about why that is. But anyways, that's just an example of one of these, you know, really common coaching cues that gets thrown around and can actually mess people up if not explained properly. And so, stomping your feet into the lip of a jump or stomping your feet into the pedals when you're trying to manual your bike, is one of those pieces of advice that is getting more and more popular. And I realized the other day when working with a client that, it can actually start to mess up how you move on your bike. And so what happened was I was working with this new client, and the basic movement behind jumping and manualing your bike is an explosive hip hinge. It's the same movement that you'd use during like a kettlebell swing or a broad jump. I actually start people out with a broad jump because that is the most basic explosive hip hinge that we have. And so you can tell a lot by how somebody's going to move on the bike by taking them off the bike and just having them do a broad jump. And so I was doing that with a new client, just kind of looking at some things, and he was jumping, and the way that he was jumping, his hips were staying static. His hips weren't moving, and he was basically using an aggressive knee extension to jump. And in talking with them a little bit, I started to realize that the reason that he did that is that he was applying a stomp. You know, when he's on his bike, he is trying to stomp his feet into his pedals. And I realized that the stomp is, it's an interesting coaching cue because it's not necessarily wrong, but it is coaching a symptom and not a cause. And this is something I've actually touched on quite a bit because I feel it's a big problem in the mountain bike skills training world where people are coaching a symptom or, you know, like the outcome without really looking at the causes and the process behind it. And this is a good example of that because there's two ways to stomp your feet into your pedals. You can do it with your knees or you can do it with your hips. And if you're using an explosive hip hinge and you're driving your hips forward like you're supposed to, you're going to feel your feet get heavy. And again, like that can be interpreted by some people as a stomp of their feet into the pedals or into the lip of a jump or whatever that is. But the problem is that you're getting people to focus on this symptom, right? Like a good explosive hip hinge, you'll feel the feet get heavy. But you can stomp your feet and make your feet get heavy without using a good explosive hip hinge. And so that's the problem that I think that some people are running into with this piece of advice is that they are focusing on the feet and not the hips. And again, I'll cue people, like I'll tell people that, you know, your feet getting heavy is something that you should feel. Right? Like you should be paying attention to that. And that's one of those cues if you're doing it properly, like your feet will get heavy, but that you're not trying to make your feet get heavy. You're trying to drive your hips forward. You know, when you're driving the hips forward, you are moving from your center of gravity, which is the way that we want to move on our bikes. We don't want to, you know, lean back with the lower back. We don't want to stomp from the knees. We want to drive the hips forward. And if we do that, then you're going to see the shoulders coming up. You're going to feel the feet get heavy. But both of those things are happening because we're focusing on driving the hips forward. And so, you know, making sure that you're using your hips to stomp or get the feet heavy. Again, I don't really like that coaching cue because, again, stomp is a very active cue and it's very specific to the feet. You stomp your feet. And so, you know, cueing someone to drive their hips forward, to drive their hips towards their towards the stem of the bike, you know, try and push your belly button towards the stem of the bike. That cue there will get you moving from the hips. And again, these other things are symptoms. The feet getting heavier is a symptom of that. And so, kind of on a side note with that, like while we're talking about the hip hinge, because that's basically the movement that we are talking about. We're talking about applying a good hip hinge, which is the same movement pattern behind a deadlift, behind a swing, behind a broad jump. This basic movement pattern, we have to be able to apply it to the bike. And again, this is a specific example of one of the skills on the bike that you need to apply this movement pattern to. And there's a lot of different applications for the hip hinge and different types of hip hinges on the bike, and this is just one of them. But one of the things that's very important for a good hip hinge is using the hips. That's why it's called a hip hinge. You know, and the hips are the glutes and the hamstrings acting at the hips to extend and open up the hip joint. And in order to do this, you have to have pressure under the back of the arch. If you don't have pressure under the back of the arch, your body will not be able to recruit the hips as effectively. It's just basic movement principles. This is why you don't push through your toes when you're squatting or deadlifting. Why you always, a lot of these movements, even like jumping, you're going to start and end with pressure and weight on your heel. And so, you know, on the back end of the arch, your body requires that pressure for you to be able to recruit your hips properly. And so, you know, off of the bike, when you're in the gym doing your squats, your deadlifts, your lunges, you want to feel like you are applying pressure through the entire arch of the foot, which is going to feel like you're pushing through the middle of the arch, right? I don't want to be pushing through just the heel. I don't want to be pushing through just the ball of the foot. I want to be applying pressure through both. And again, that'll feel like I'm applying pressure through the middle of the arch or a midfoot position. And so this same principle, it applies on the bike as well. You know, I say it all the time, like just because you throw your leg over a bike doesn't mean that all the movement principles that apply off the bike are gone. Like they're still there. We have to look at how do we apply proper movement principles to the bike. And so if we're applying a hip hinge to the bike, this same movement principle of needing pressure on both ends of the arch, especially on the back end of the arch in order to recruit the hips properly, it applies to the bike. And so this is why small pedals make it so hard to execute a proper hip hinge based movement on the bike. When you go to stomp or get your feet heavy, or whatever cue that you're using, like basically driving your hips forward, when you do that on small pedals, and basically I call small pedals anything that does not support both ends of your arch are too small. Because now you have an unstable arch. You're not supporting both ends of the arch. And now you're trying to stomp or drive your feet into the pedals and you have an unstable arch, which is going to affect your balance and your muscle recruitment. And so you have to have a pedal that supports both ends of your arch and allows for a true midfoot position if you're going to apply a proper hip hinge on the bike. Otherwise, you're not able to apply the same foot position to the bike that you practice and use off of the bike. In fact, it's kind of, you know, funny to me. There's several skills coaches out there that disagree with me on this point and coach a ball of the foot, position for people. But one of the skills coaches who really likes bikes sent out an email and, you know, talking about a proper hip hinge, because he also has a training tool to help you work on your hip hinge. And so he was talking about what a proper hip hinge is. And in his description, in his email, he even talked about how when you're doing a proper hip hinge, you want to be able to apply pressure through the middle of the foot. And so again, there's a disconnect for people that they know this off of the bike, but for some reason, there is a giant disconnect for this being applied on the bike. You'll see these same coaches who will coach a ball of the foot position in the gym driving through their entire arch using both ends of the arch to do their squats and deadlifts and lunges. And again, there's a disconnect there. And so, again, it's very important that you have proper support for your foot in order for your body to move well. And you need to be able to move well for you to be able to apply good skills in a balanced and controlled way on your bike. And so, again, a lot of this is why, the pedal that I designed, the Catalyst pedal, is designed the way that it is. That was the insight that I had, was that we need to support both ends of the arch for the foot to work properly. And so this is why a lot of Catalyst pedal riders report that they have a better hip hinge. They're able to manual and jump better on their bikes because their foot is supported properly and they're able to use their hips properly. And so so the point is that if you want to have a good hip hinge on the bike, if you want to be able to manual and jump and do all of those fun things that come from having a good explosive hip hinge, then you need to, one, focus on the hip hinge itself, which is driving the hips forward. You want to focus on moving from the hips, not stomping the feet. And you want to make sure that at the very least you're using a midfoot position with whatever pedals you're using. The more that midfoot position you're able to get to, and the more you're able to support both ends of the arch, the better your body is going to be able to do this. And so that's the big take-home message for you as it applies to your bike. So anyway, so that's it. So again, just beware of the hip stomp versus the knee stomp. If you're not really sure what I'm talking about, go do a broad jump. Basically, like, just stand and see how far you can jump forward. And, you know, it sounds funny. People are like, whatever. But a lot of people don't practice jumping. So one, you'll probably be surprised at how awkward and difficult it is. And two, you'll be surprised at how easy it is to hurt yourself. And so you don't need to be going 100%. Like, you know, just give it like 80% effort, doing a few jumps, and, you know, maybe have somebody video you and watch and see, like, are you moving by, you know, having the hips go back and then the hips go forward? The movement needs to be driven from the hips moving back and then forward. And so if you're watching yourself jump and you see that there's points where your hips stop moving, your hips are basically static, but you're still moving, well, that means that you're moving from the knees or the lower back or something like that. And so just practicing a few times a week, some basic broad jumps, and really focusing on driving the hips forward to drive the movement will do a lot for your ability to apply that movement to the bike, and again, help improve your manualing and jumping and these other skills. And so anyways, hopefully that will help you out with that. So moving on to the next subject, digging into a little bit of training advice here. The Turkish getup. The Turkish getup is one of my favorite exercises. I've been a huge advocate for this exercise for many, many years. I've got a ton of videos on this exercise on my website. In fact, at one point, I had a lot of people accusing me of having some sort of obsession with the exercise because I did so many posts and things on it. And one of the reasons that I like it so much is because it's not just one exercise. When you break it down, it's, you know, each movement is an exercise in itself. And so you have this beautiful movement which has you starting laying down on the ground and ends with you standing up. And all of the transitions and all the movements that have to take place between those two positions There's just so much goodness going on there. So much, great core strength and mobility and all these things that we need both on and off of the bike. So that's one of the reasons that I love the Turkish getup so much. But the other day I posted a video of me doing a different version of the Turkish getup, or a getup. I don't even know if you can call it a Turkish getup, really. Using a mace. And I had both hands on the mace, so I wasn't able to use my hands. And so, you'll see some people do the same method if they're holding two kettlebells. Steve Cotter is a real famous kettlebell guy who does stuff like this. But there's basically another way to do a get up, without using your hands. And I had somebody, post a comment questioning like, hey, I thought the whole point of the get up was to create a, misloaded, situation, cause you're holding the weight on one side, and that misloaded situation and having to hold the weight overhead, creates all these demands on the body, and that's what the point of the Turkish getup is. And it dawned on me that, wow, that's not untrue, but I wouldn't say that that's the point of the Turkish getup. And what's happened is that people associate the Turkish getup so strongly with the kettlebell that they think that it's a kettlebell exercise. Like, you'll actually hear people refer to the Turkish getup as a kettlebell exercise, which is absolutely not true. It is not a kettlebell exercise. It was not part of the traditional Russian training system or anything like that when it came to kettlebells. The Turkish getup is a wrestling exercise. And it can be done with a variety of tools and a variety of ways. I've heard two different people, both Dan John and Steve Maxwell, refer to reading about the Turkish getup in the 70s in a book called I forget the name of it. Something about the wrestling encyclopedia. I think James Jessup or something. Sorry, my notes are not better. I was trying to figure out where it was. I couldn't find the notes that had that book and the author. But the point is that there was a book on conditioning for wrestling written in the 70s that had the Turkish getup in it. And what happened was Steve Maxwell introduced Pavel Sotsalin to the Turkish getup in the early days of, Pavel's kettlebell revolution, or whatever you want to call it, like reintroduction of kettlebells or repopularization of kettlebells back in the late 90s, early 2000s, when kettlebells were starting to get back on the scene. And back in those days, again, they were just meeting up and they were just sharing information. And Steve Maxwell showed the Turkish getup to Pavel. And obviously Pavel saw the potential and what the good stuff in the Turkish getup. And so he adopted it and incorporated it into the Russian kettlebell certification system, the famous RKC system. And so that's it. Like, that's kind of the history of how we got to the point where we're at with the kettlebell. But like I said, a lot of people don't realize that, and they think that the Turkish getup is a kettlebell exercise, and the kettlebell version is the way to do a Turkish getup. And like I said, that's absolutely not true, that there's a lot of different ways and a lot of different tools that you can use. And that I think that we're missing out by not doing different variations of it and getting so stuck on the kettlebell version. So again, the kettlebell version is good and I still use it, but like everything else, I mean, there are some issues with the kettlebell version. One, people can use the weight, they have it overhead, they have it, locked out with their arm. So you can kind of move that thing offline a little bit to help counterbalance you, to help get you up. Now, you're not supposed to, right? But people still do it. They'll move the weight, they'll tomahawk it a little bit when they're trying to get up on that initial movement. So you can use that weight a little bit to cheat. People with hypermobile shoulders, I've seen this a lot. If you have hypermobile shoulders, you're able to get away with bad form and bad transitions in other areas of the body. And so again, you got to be really, vigilant about that. And if you're not aware of that, it's very easy to not do a good Turkish getup. And I've seen that quite a bit. And then finally, if you have shoulder problems, if you have trouble, you know, pressing a heavy weight out and holding it overhead, which is extremely common, especially with riders as you get older. I mean, a lot of us have popped AC joints, have messed up our elbows. And so it gets harder and harder to hold heavy weights overhead. And if you have an injured shoulder, you know, what are you going to do? So it can be hard to access this exercise if the only version that you're doing is the one where you're holding a weight overhead. And so this is why I like, you know, different versions of it. One of the ones I really like is the sandbag version where you're, you know, not holding the bag with your head or hand. You have it on your shoulder. So you basically have a sandbag over your shoulder and you're doing the get up like that. And it takes that shoulder out of it. There's a lot of good things that come from that. And obviously you're missing some of the shoulder stability and mobility things that come with that. But because you're taking the shoulder out of the equation, you also don't have to worry about people with shoulder issues. People who have hypermobile shoulders can't get away with bad form and have to move properly with the weight, on their shoulder like that. And you can't use the weight to help you move. You can't tomahawk the weight. You can't offline the weight to help counterbalance you and help you get up and move. And so it gets rid of a lot of those things. And so the sandbag version is great. I also like versions, like I mentioned, I was holding a mace in front of me. You can also hold a sandbag in like the Zerker squat position, kind of hugging it in front of you. But when you're doing a get up, holding the weight with both arms, then now you're forced to use just your legs. And so, you know, where you're missing out on some of the shoulder mobility, you're really demanding a lot more from your hip mobility. And so, you know, using those different variations, all of them, you know, holding the weight overhead, using a sandbag on your shoulder, and then also holding the weight in front of you with both hands will create different demands and create a more well-rounded human being, I think, than just sticking to the same version over and over and over again, because we've just got it stuck in our heads that like the kettlebell version is the Turkish getup. So what I recommend doing is, you know, cycling through different versions of the Turkish getup. I personally, every 2 to 3 weeks, will switch up which version I'm working on. And so, again, it's just another way to progress the movement. So you don't always have to keep adding load or things like that. So you know, you can go to my website at bikejames.com. I got some different, I got sandbag Turkish getups and some different, you know, things like that. But it, you know, it doesn't have to be overly complicated. The take home point is use more than just the kettlebell version and you'll get more out of your overall getup training. So, all right. So with that, we're going to move on to the last segment here, which is our bro science. And so in this, what I did with this one, it's actually pretty fun, man. I've been looking at a lot of different studies and it's really interesting, to look at these things. A lot of studies, it's surprising, man. They come from the category of, well, duh, you know, hey, strength training makes you stronger. Holy crap. Do we really need this many studies looking at it? But every once in a while you dig around and you find some interesting stuff. And so I was digging around. I was specifically looking at research on isometric training. And so, you know, if you've been following me for the past few months, you know that I've become a huge fan of isometric training. I use a specific type called ramping isometrics that has really just changed the way that I look at training, the way that I do my own training. It's kind of become the cornerstone for my own strength training program. And so, you know, just a big fan of isometrics and seeing the results that they give, you know, it's one of these things like, man, why don't more people know about this? Why don't more people use isometric training? And so I wanted to look at some of the studies and see if there were other, benefits to it that, you know, I could help share with people, maybe pique their interest in it. And so I found three things that I thought were pretty interesting. So one, the first thing, there were a few studies. Now, obviously, when you're looking at the studies, you got to look at, you know, who were they doing the studies on? What were the methods that they were using? So admittedly, none of these studies that I'm about to talk about were done on mountain bikers, you know, using mountain biking as the testing method. And so, the first set of studies that I came across looked at isometrics and their effect on blood pressure. And there were several studies that found that isometric training can lower blood pressure. So again, they were doing these studies in a lot of times in older individuals, and a lot of them had hypertension. So take that for what it's worth. This is why it's bro science, right? But To me, again, this is something I've also experienced on a personal level from my own training and had feedback from other people as well. What this seems to indicate to me is that high tension activities like isometric training, they also force the body to learn how to lower tension. And so, you know, a lot of people get stuck in this gray zone where their tension, they can't really like increase their tension, but they can't really relax and decrease it too. And when you look at athletes, like one of the things that they found when looking at Olympic level sprinters versus, you know, people who almost got there, it wasn't that sprinters, the Olympic level sprinters could produce more force. It's that they were able to relax more between strides. So they would produce force very forcefully, but then they would relax more than the people underneath them. So it's actually their ability to relax and lower tension that separated Olympic level sprinters from the people who were almost there but couldn't quite get there. It wasn't their ability to produce more force. And so, you know, this ability to relax is extremely, extremely important for you as an athlete, especially a mountain bike athlete. I mean, you get that hard climb and you get that short little rest, and the more you can rest and relax and let your body recover in that short little time period before you hit that next high tension effort, the better, right? And so that's one of the main things that you want to work on as a mountain bike athlete, because we don't have a steady state sport. There's a lot of high intensity followed by low intensity. And so your ability to ramp it up and then relax is extremely important on the trail. And so, just the effect that isometrics had on blood pressure to me seems to indicate that isometric training, because you're able to achieve higher tension levels with isometric training than with any other type of training, there's no way you can produce the same tension levels lifting weights that you can just with an isometric contraction. And so, because those high tension levels, the highest tension levels possible, also force your body to learn how to relax more than regular strength training does. The second thing, one study that I found that isometric training not only increased strength, but it also increased the metabolic enzymes in the muscles needed for aerobic metabolism. And so what this means, those enzymes in the muscle are how your muscles utilize the oxygen that you're taking in. And this is something, again, we don't always think about, but your aerobic fitness, your cardio is not just your ability to take in more oxygen. It's also your ability to utilize the oxygen that you're taking in. So if you're increasing your lung capacity, you're increasing your ability to take in more oxygen, but you're not also increasing your muscles' ability to utilize that oxygen, it's not going to be super effective for you. You're not going to notice as much on the trail. And so this is the other side of the equation, which is these enzymes that your muscles use to actually utilize the oxygen. And so it was pretty interesting. In fact, the conclusion actually used the word surprisingly. It seems that isometric training can also increase, endurance through the increasing these enzymes, aerobic, metabolism. And so anyways, again, just something that I've experienced, but this study seems to also indicate that you're not only getting strength benefits, but you're directly increasing the muscle's ability to utilize oxygen. So you're getting a cardio training / endurance training effect as well from isometrics. And then the third and final thing, was looking at a bunch of studies. Again, I found one of the things that stood out to me was that nothing increases isometric strength like isometric training. And again, that seems to be from the category of like, well, duh. But, you know, if you think about it though, we're missing out, because a lot of people aren't using isometrics as part of their training program. And so again, what a lot of these studies were finding was that isometric training would significantly increase isometric strength. And also you would see some increases in other types of strength as well. But just doing the other types of strength training, you know, concentric and eccentric based strength training, you would see improvements there, but you wouldn't see very significant improvements in isometric training. So isometric training seems to have a decent carryover to all types of strength with a very specific improvement for itself, while the other types of strength training have carryover to themselves, but don't seem to have as much transfer to isometric training. And now, what does this mean for us as mountain bikers, right? You're like, well, we have a dynamic sport. Like, we're not standing still, isometric training, whatever. But if you think about it, isometric strength and strength endurance is extremely important for pedal power, because your ability to stabilize your upper body and your core, basically isometrically contract and create that platform for your legs to create power from, is a lot of times the weak link in people's pedaling power. It's not their legs' ability to create more power. It's their upper body and core's ability to direct that power into the pedals and be able to stabilize and allow the legs to create that strength and power. So again, if you're, you know, pedaling and you don't have good isometric strength, that's where you see a lot of movement in the body. A lot of the body's moving up and down, as opposed to the all of that energy going into the pedals. And so your isometric strength and strength endurance of your upper body and core is extremely important for your pedaling power and pedaling power endurance. And so increasing that isometric strength, and again, the only thing that increases isometric strength effectively is isometric training. So you have to have isometric training as part of your training program. And so that's it. I mean, those are kind of the three things I found that were just in looking at the studies that are out there on isometric training, just kind of some of the interesting things that I came across that I wanted to share that we don't always think about when thinking about isometric training. But it's a great training method. I mean, just personally, I found it great because it doesn't take a lot of time. Your chances of getting hurt are almost zero. Again, people take that as a challenge. So I know someone will figure out a way to hurt themselves doing isometric training. But for me and my clients, we found it to be a very safe, very effective training method. You don't get beat up and as sore and tired as you do with traditional strength training. So for me, I've been doing 2 days a week of isometric based training, and then 1 or 2 days a week of movement based, you know, kind of more traditional strength training stuff. That's where I'll be doing my mace stuff and my Indian club stuff. And if I'm going to be doing deadlifts and things like that, it'll be in that, on those days. But the cornerstone for my training has become isometric training, because, and then riding my bike, it's you're using strength training to improve your ability to create tension within a movement pattern. And then you're using your sport to train your body how to apply that tension to movement, to the movement that you want. So that's why I like isometric training. And I do have the ramping isometric training program that you can check out at bikejames.com if you're interested in that and kind of getting a program to help you incorporate isometrics into your workout. So that's going to be it for this podcast. Hopefully you guys have, you know, enjoyed it and learned some cool stuff. As always, these podcasts are brought to you by MTB Strength Training Systems. Obviously my training company, my goal from day one has been to produce the best mountain bike specific strength and conditioning programs out there. And so that has been, what I've been doing since 2005. I think when I started my website. And so anyways, you can learn a lot more there. You got a lot of, at bikejames.com. I've got my free workout of the month, going right now. So you can go there and sign up for that. And, also if you're ever in the Fruita Grand Junction area riding, I host a free workout every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. It's some mobility. It's some isometric stuff. So it's nothing, super tough. But it's definitely very effective. But yeah, if you're ever in the area and you want to join me for the workout, you can email me at james@bikejames.com, or, you know, hit me up on Facebook and I'll get you more information. But, and then also we are brought to you by Pedaling Innovations, my other company. I mentioned the Catalyst pedals earlier when talking about the importance of stabilizing both ends of the arch for proper hip movement on the bike. And so again, the Catalyst pedal was my insight into a better way to support the foot, so that we can move better on the bike. And so you can learn more at pedalinginnovations.com. But yeah, it's the only pedal, actually really only bike part out there, period, that has a 30-day money-back guarantee. I mean, that's how confident I am that once you try them, you'll realize that this is what your foot has been looking for the entire time. And you'll wonder, like, God damn, why are we messing with these small pedals for so long? But anyways, the rest of the world will catch up, guys, so don't worry. But in the meantime, you can go to pedalinginnovations.com, learn more about the science and movement principles behind the Catalyst pedals, and pick up a pair for yourself. So once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and Pedaling Innovations. And yeah, check me out at bikejames.com. If you got any questions or comments or any you know, topics you want to see me cover in future podcasts, you can hit me up at james@bikejames.com. I'm always happy to help. And yeah, hopefully you guys have a great rest of your day, and I will talk to everybody next time.